This episode is brought to you by Lilly Pulitzer. They're celebrating 65 years of creating sunshine. We will explain more about that in a bit, but first, let's get into the episode.
It was a very like poignant moment for me of feeling like I may not be as like smart on paper as these guys who have these fancy degrees, but I did have this idea for this really kick-ass business that seems to be really resonating with people.
I'm Carly Zakin.
And I'm Danielle Weisberg.
Welcome to 9 to 5-ish with The Skin.
We've run into so many questions over the years and had so many moments where we needed advice, and we got it from women who'd been there.
And that's what we're bringing you with this show. Each week, we're helping you get what you want out of your career by talking to the smartest leaders we know.
Because we know your work life is a lot more than 9 to 5.
All right, let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Today, our guest is Allie Webb. Allie is a New York Times bestselling author and the co-founder of Drybar. Back in 2009, when Allie was a stay-at-home mom, she started a mobile hair business. She'd charged just $40 for a full blowout, something that pretty much no one was offering at the time, which seems insane. 1 year later, Allie launched Drybar, the first salon in LA to offer high-quality blowouts at an affordable price. Since then, the business exploded to over 150 locations across the U.S. and now sells hairstyling products like finishing sprays and color care. I really love the travel leave-in conditioner. Thank you. In 2019, Drybar announced it was selling its product rights for $255 million and went on to sell its franchise rights for an undisclosed amount in 2021. Aside from Drybar, Allie is also the co-founder of the massage company Squeeze and Beckett and Quill, a digital-first jewelry brand. In 2022, she became the president of Canopy, which creates best-in-class humidifiers that focus on benefits for your hair, skin, and scalp. Finally, Allie is an author. Late last year, she published her memoir, The Messy Truth, which details her life as an entrepreneur, mother, and partner, and how she learned to embrace the messiness of it all. Allie, welcome to 9 to 5-ish.
Thanks for having me.
We are very excited to have you here. So we'll start off with our very famous lightning round. I'm sure you've heard all about it. People talk about it all the time. But first question, what is the very first job you got paid for?
My very first job I worked at, nobody has heard of this, but Koala Blue, which was at the mall, which was Olivia Newton-John's concept for like 5 minutes.
Wait, what was it?
It was this like, so funny. It was like kind of a clothing store. And then it had like a little like smoothie bar where you could get like milkshakes. It was awesome.
So you worked for Olivia Newton-John technically?
Well, not for her.
But technically her vision?
I could be wrong. Don't quote me.
I'm going to say that you're right and that you basically were in Greece.
I feel like maybe it was, I don't know. You know how like sometimes you remember things wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, we all remember things wrong. And it was called like Koala. I really think it was her. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
That's fine. Allie, you were in Greece and I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Do you have any secret hobbies or skills?
My secret hobby that I'm not very good at is singing. Like I really want to be a singer. Like, I want to be on stage singing. That's like my life dream. But I'm taking singing lessons right now. I'm not really very good at it. So it's not like a skill.
I mean, I thought your solos in Greece were fantastic. What is your go-to karaoke song?
I mean, gosh, any Taylor Swift song, any country song. And I'm sure at some point I will move to Nashville and try to sing on some sort of stage.
What is the boldest career move you ever made?
All of my career moves were pretty, sorry, do you hear that? It's my dog growling in the background.
Oh, it was very low. We hear lots of like dogs and kids on this show. It's part of being on the podcast.
But yeah, I mean, I think that I jumped from career to career several times in my life. So I think they're all like have some boldness to them, like going from, you know, I moved to New York City and I worked in fashion. And then my brother and I moved back to South Florida and opened up Nicole Miller Boutiques. And I was like all of like 20 years old then, and I was running a store. So I don't think I've ever been qualified for any job I've ever done, including Drybar. But I just was like, well, what could happen? I mean, no one's going to die. So I should just try.
Speaking of dry bar, what is the hair trend you'd want to see make a comeback?
Well, funny you should ask. You know, I am working on something that has to do with something about that, which I can't completely disclose yet. But with that being said, I think we are going to see a swing back towards more natural hair, which I'm sorry for all the blowout fans out there. And I love a good blowout as much as the next girl. But I think we're going to start seeing a little bit more of a trend to like natural, not so perfect, like less polished hair.
As someone who maybe unintentionally embraces less than perfect hair every day as I stare at you, and I forgot to get a blowout before this podcast.
But I don't have a blowout, for the record.
Yeah, but our hair looks real different.
Do you do your hair every day? Because right now it looks like you gave yourself a blowout.
So I did not give myself a blowout. I'll tell you exactly what I did to my hair. I let my hair dry completely naturally yesterday, and I woke up today and it was very frizzy, and I just went over it with an iron before this interview.
Well, that's the difference. Like I put in some things that were supposed to make it look better as it air dried, but it didn't.
Well, there is an art to air drying.
Well, here's my question. You are going on a deserted island. The only thing you can bring is one thing to do your hair with. What is the thing? It could be a product. It could be a tool.
If I'm on a deserted island, then there's going to be the ocean. And so I'll get the salt spray from that. So like the salt water will be good for my hair. So I would want to bring in something that's like really makes my hair soft and silky. So I would bring in like some sort of like nourishing spray.
Okay. Here's my loaded question that's going to segue into our real talk. You've worked with a now ex-husband. You've worked with your parents. You've worked with your brother on this desert island. You don't have to live with this person, but you have to work with one relative, ex or not. Who would you work with again?
Okay, so just for the scene of the deserted island, is it like, do I have somebody else or just this person?
Just this person, but we're not talking about romantic. It's just like you get to have good hair and you get to work.
Probably be my brother, but I think I'd rather have like my best friend who we work together too, my best friend Paige. I think that would be more enjoyable. Sorry, Mike.
All right, good segue.
So I want to go back to where it all started. Boca.
Boca.
Let's talk about Boca. Let's talk about your parents' small business. How'd you grow up? What was it like having entrepreneurs as parents?
I had a great childhood, but my parents were very, you know, it was like they had their own business, like, and it was called Flips. It was like Flips is all we ever talked about, all we ever heard about, you know, and it was, and I get it now because my kids certainly have that, you know, they grew up with Drybar and that's all they ever heard about, you know, and so I think that's kind of par for the course. But I think that like I watched my parents and got such an education that I didn't know I was getting watching them build their business, grow their business. And you know, that I now recognize that I, of course, didn't ever think I'd have a need for or whatever. Didn't think about it one way or the other. And it was such a great foundation to grow up. And I didn't really like aspire to be an entrepreneur when I was younger or even older. Like I was very happy to work for other people and didn't really know where my life would go. And, you know, when we did start Drybar and even when I started the mobile business that led to Drybar, I realized like how much I knew. Realized that I knew about growing a business and customer service and like how to treat people and all of that. So it was quite a gift that my parents gave me that I didn't, you know, I didn't really recognize as that at the time.
When we were researching this, we were both struck by the fact that you've been very open of not having like formal business training, going to business school, but you also have been very open that you never went to college either. And I'm curious, you know, I don't want to talk about like imposter syndrome per se, but I'm curious, as your career has taken all the twists and turns that it has, what is the moment that stands out where you're like, damn, I wish I had had that education? And then I have the flip side of that question.
I don't think I've ever had that moment. You know, I feel like quite the contrary. Like, I think that, like, you know, I hear more stories of people who've spent those years in college and then you have to start the way I did it, which was like I moved to New York when I was 18 and lived there basically until I was 30 and had a bunch of jobs and experiences, and I was well on my way to whatever was next or much earlier. What I hear a lot is that, you know, unless you're becoming a doctor or a lawyer or like an engineer, like where you actually need to learn certain things to be able to do what you want to do, from an entrepreneur standpoint, learning how to deal with people and be in different environments. Like, I don't know. I don't know how much you learn of that at school.
Well, so the flip side of my question is there a singular moment that stands out where you're like, I'm doing the thing, and all these people with the degrees who like think that I couldn't, I'm doing it, and I'm doing it better than them. So like, is there a moment that like you just like visualize when you think like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably, and again, I want to also be like considerate and mindful of like, if you're somebody who's listening to this who is in college or wants to go to college, like, please go to college. Like, it just wasn't the path for me. I mean, I think to answer your question, the moment that felt kind of real to me was when we did start to like raise real money and like put a board together at Drybar. And I found myself in a room with like some really smart people who were like big fancy college degrees, like Stanford, Harvard, you know, like the really good schools. And I remember being really intimidated by them and like how much smarter they were than me and how, you know, somewhat unworthy in that moment. But it very quickly passed. And I tell this story like in my book, The Messy Truth, about how, you know, I would text my brother a question that I was embarrassed to ask because I didn't feel like it was like, you know, smart enough, or, you know, I was going to feel stupid if I asked that question. You know, my brother was always like, no, it's a good question. You should ask it. It was a very like poignant moment for me of feeling like I may not be as like smart on paper as these guys who have these fancy degrees, but I did have this idea for this really kick-ass business that seems to be really resonating with people. And I think it was that gave me the confidence to be like, oh, like, just because I'm not smart in that traditional way doesn't mean I'm not smart, you know? And I think that was a big turning point for me to really start owning who I was and the fact that I, you know, and now obviously, like, I've had a lot of success. I've sold my business. I've done pretty well for myself. You know, I'm so probably overly confident about what I don't know. You know, it's like, I can't tell you how many times I am in a conversation with somebody and I'll be like, I'm sorry, what does that mean? Like, because I don't care. Like, I don't worry anymore that someone's going to think I'm not that smart because I don't know. Like, and I ask all the time, like, what does that word mean? And I'm kind of fascinated by vocabulary and words, despite the fact that I don't know a lot of them. And so when someone uses a big fancy word, I'm like, can you tell me what that word means? Because I think I'd like to use it at some point. And I think that was all part of my, you know, progression of becoming, you know, an entrepreneur who was able to stand on her own 2 feet and had enough confidence in what I had done in my own right.
So one thing to know about me is that I love my birthday. I love my half birthday. When we started the company, it's like, great, now we have another birthday that we can celebrate. And so really, I look at Skim's birthday as kind of like my own. And we have another one coming up, which is 12 years of inspiring and empowering women. And we are so excited to celebrate.
Lily, as in Lily Pulitzer, the originator of American Resort Wear, is celebrating 65 years of inspiring women to shine bright and stand out. One way that they've done that for me is that I have an upcoming aspiration of wearing the cutest Lily tennis outfit and actually playing. But if not, I'm going to look really good on the court. Their versatile pieces are exactly what you need for warm weather getaways, special occasions, or to elevate your everyday looks. And I have to say, they are timeless and made to last. Shop spring must-haves at lilypulitzer.com. That's spelled LILLYPULITZER.com, or find your local store.
We've had a lot of entrepreneurs on the show who sort of became accidental successes, I would say, like, in, you know, not the traditional route one might envision. And they all kind of share that consistency of like being open and like being a sponge and taking it all in, and that's what makes them that much stronger. But I think on the other hand, when you're a sponge, you're taking a lot in, and we all know from cooking, sometimes a sponge gets a little too saturated and you need a second sponge. So my question is, like, as somebody who built this empire, was doing all of this, was working with their husband at the time, like, had a family and children, like, you only are one sponge. And I was really struck by how you kind of were honest with your family and yourself around how much you could take on and how much you could spread yourself. And I'm curious if you can like talk a little bit about the conversation you had with your family when you said, you know, might not be able to show up to everything, might not be 100% present at all the things. I don't think a lot of people are as honest as what we've read you were. And I would love you to share that story.
I think it was like, you know, the realizing that I couldn't do it all the time. There was just so much guilt on both sides and all the sides, you know, from like the kids and the work and all the things that like, you know, at some point, I think I just recognized that like, I can't be everywhere and I can't make everybody happy. And the most important piece of that was my kids. And I think the story that you're kind of referring to is like, I would talk to my kids about what things were important to them that I'd be at and what things like didn't really matter to them. And really like the thing about kids so beautiful is like, they're so honest. And if you have a conversation with a kid about, hey, I can't be at this thing or I can be at this thing, just tell me what thing is more important to you. And my son would always say like, yeah, this thing, it doesn't matter, mom, but this thing I really want you at, you know? So I would move heaven and earth to make sure I got to that thing and knew I had some leeway on the other thing. I think that just, you know, is such an important lesson in communication with your kids or your business partners or whatever, of like figuring out what's priority. I think that we all run into this problem of trying to boil the ocean and just do too much. And when we're able to pull back, you know, and letting ourselves off the hook. Like I have found so much freedom in that over the years. I mean, in the dry bar days and beyond, this like idea that, you know, I don't have to do everything all the time has been incredibly freeing to me. And I think that started to, you know, come online in the dry bar era where I felt like I was so burnt out. I was trying to do everything for everybody all the time. And I just could not sustain that. And I had to start having some honest conversations about it, you know?
I think a lot of entrepreneurs feel that in different ways and wouldn't necessarily have an honest conversation with their family. And I think we hear from so many different women on the show about there is a sense of guilt in not being able to do a good job at all those different roles at the same moment in time, which we all know logically is not possible. But I think very few women have we talked to who actually, you know, made a decision to come up with a plan about how they were going to stop feeling that way.
Yeah, I mean, at least for me, you know, I think it's like I've been through some really hard things that I think cause you to go into another kind of realm. You know, when my first divorce fell apart and my son went to rehab, my life was like, I mean, just so bananas. You know, it was like it caused me to do so much work on myself. And through that, it was like the 2.0 version of myself, the softer version of myself. And I think that kind of work helps you have more awareness around yourself. And I think the awareness is what gets us to that kind of like, we've got to like face this shit. Like, what are we doing? Versus what we all do, which I did, which is like, you know, use something else to cover it up, not face it, like dance around it. Like self-awareness is like the holy grail of everything. And so many people don't have it and don't in so many different ways, you know? And I think that this, what you're talking about is the big thing with that is like, if you have self-awareness and you know that you're just not as good to yourself and to anybody else. And to be able to recognize that and have those conversations. Like you can't have those kind of conversations if you're not aware of it yourself, you know? So I think that was the gift in the unraveling of my life was that it drove a deeper self-awareness for me and the softer side. And just, I'm so different. I'm so different now as a human than I was in the dry bar era. And it doesn't mean I'm still really driven. I still work really hard. It just looks a lot different.
So one of the things that you said that I think Carly and I as founders, entrepreneurs can really relate to is that you said, I could never see myself working myself into the ground again, the way I did when we were growing Dry Bar. It was like a badge of honor. You talk about building Dry Bar as being intoxicating. Looking back, could you have built the company to the success that it was without that level of grind? Or do you think, you know, the intoxication, the kind of unhealthy work habits, pressure, all of it that went into it is just part of the magic?
Yeah. I mean, I think Dry Bar could have been as successful as it was, and I could have had a healthier mental compass than I did. Yes, I do believe that's true. And I don't think that negates any of the hard work. I just, and I'm sure you guys can relate to this, I spent an enormous amount of time worrying about so much that I didn't need to worry about.
What was the stuff that like got under your skin the most? Like for some, it's management and like people stuff. For others, it's not going fast enough. For others, it's marketing stuff. What was like the thing that like got your blood pressure up the most?
Well, I think all of those things for sure. I mean, those are like, those are the main things that kind of get us. But I, you know, for me, I think it was customer experience and like consistency from shop to shop. My dream, my hope, my, you know, my goal was that you would have a really great experience no matter where you were, even though it was a different hairstylist and whatever. And so creating that and getting that to work consistently across the board was very, 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 very challenging. And in my mind, I was convinced always, and this was like to the detriment of my mental health, that like, you know, if one thing went wrong in one store at one time, like the whole thing was going to fall apart. And I now know that that didn't happen. And that's not the truth. And the thing is, it is, as you know, it's a fine line because it's like, you don't want to be so flippant about it that you're not like reacting to problems or things that are happening. But you also like don't want to make yourself sick about it with worry, which I did. And then it's kind of like comes into like the enjoy the journey part of it, because I would get so upset all the time. And it did feel like a badge of honor. Like if I was, you know, and I also like, you know, mistaked passion with like being kind of a bitch because I was so enamored with like it being perfect in a certain way, you know, I would be crazy when I would walk into a shop and I'd lose my mind, you know, and that wasn't productive and that didn't do anybody any favors. And I had to learn that lesson the hard way that like there was a better way to disseminate information of like things that I didn't think were working. Like I didn't need to get myself so worked up and I certainly didn't need to get other people worked up, you know? And so there was so much learning in all of that. And to answer your question, if I had to do it again, I would do it in a calmer way, you know, for myself and for everybody else involved. But again, that doesn't mean we'd work less hard. It would just be a different way of attacking and, you know, coming at the business that I had no way of knowing, you know, like, you know, I don't know if you guys saw, but I'm launching this thing called the Messy Collective, which is like, you know, kind of like what we're talking about, like giving, you know, mini masterclasses on things that I learned. And, you know, there was no roadmap for me. There was no, for, you know, for the entrepreneurs that started in 2010-ish when we did, there wasn't a lot of resources, you know, it was like, you're figuring it out, which is cool. Like I enjoyed that, but I feel like I can look back and know where it was unnecessary stress. And it can, I think, and again, it's such a great question because I do think that you can achieve success and you can work really hard without having to kill yourself at the same time, you know, which I didn't get that memo for a long, long time.
We've obviously followed Drybar for years, but we've also like followed your Instagram for years. You know, we've never met until this podcast recording. And I feel like we know a lot about you from what you've shared publicly. I'm just curious, Allie, not the brand, but just like Allie as the person, like, do you ever hesitate sharing with your followers? And I'm asking this like as fellow founders and CEOs where, you know, we all have stuff in our lives, but I'm curious, are you, you know, you've said you, you know, you learn stuff the hard way. Like, do you feel like you are sharing kind of the live version of learning, or are you, is the Messy Collective kind of looking back at the stuff that you already went through?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, it's like where I was then and what I learned from it and where I am now and what I'm learning from it. I don't share everything. I do share a lot, but I really try to look at it through the lens of how can this help people? I mean, trust me, there's things that I want to share that I don't. I'll leave it at that. I don't remember who it was, but someone said to me once, like the way to approach Instagram is how can you serve others? You know, which I think is really largely a big part of my life in general is like, I want to serve people in lots of different ways. And by sharing, you know, something that's happening with me, whether it's personal or business or whatever, it is, I feel like it's a gift, you know, to share to other people and like, take it or leave it. Like if this helps you, great. If it doesn't, no problem, you know? And I think we all feel like that, you know, it's like we get different things from different people on Instagram or out in the world that's like helpful for us. And I'm also a big believer of like, we can learn and hear what we want when we're ready for it. It's like when the student is ready, the teacher will arrive. Like I really love that sentiment because I do feel like it's very true. Like there's been times in my life where I've heard advice or something that I've heard 100 times. And then I hear it one time in one way from one person. And I'm like, oh, you know, and then the response has always been so positive and so appreciative that it, you know, just kind of makes me want to do it more.
Once you were done with the day-to-day with Drybar, you sell the company, you've gone on to do other things, but how do you figure out what you want to do next after having such an all-encompassing experience like that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that like when we sold Drybar, you know, which was almost four years ago now, like that I've been in this a little bit of like an identity crisis of who am I now? Like, what am I doing now? What's my life look like now? And I've been throwing a lot at the wall, you know, to figure out what that looks like. Some of it is like the ventures that we've started, which like Squeeze, for example, our former head of marketing at Drybar, Brittany Driscoll, runs Squeeze. She's the CEO and our co-founder. And, you know, I didn't want to start a new company and run a new company like the way we did with Drybar. I don't know that I have that in me.
I just had such a deja vu. There's no way you remember this, but when we started the Skim, we were like, what's one of the first brands we wanted to partner with? Drybar was like top of the list. We cold emailed you and you looped in Brittany Driscoll on an email to like be your first conversation. So thank you for that.
Did we do something together?
We had a lot of conversations.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when you guys launched. I mean, it's such a cool brand.
But it's just funny when you say that, I'm like, wow, good for Brittany.
Yeah. And she's killing it. She's doing such a great job. You know, I didn't have it in me. I don't have it in me to do that again. Like, it's funny when you ask, like, if I were to do it again, I'm like, well, definitely not doing it again. You know, too old, too tired for that. You know, and I'm just in a different, you know, it's different season, a different phase of my life. And so I am very much in the throes right now of figuring out, you know, what I want to be doing with my time and my life. And so that is, you know, what you're seeing in all the projects that I'm doing, from writing the book to the Messy Collective to this like Blueprint Mastermind that I, you know, run with Jacqueline Johnson. And I'm just trying a lot of things out. You know, a lot of people say to me, like, why don't you just like go lay on a beach somewhere? I'm like, what? Like, what? No, like, that'd be so boring.
Well, you do know what you're packing for the beach now.
That's true. But I think that I think a rich life is a life of purpose, you know, and so whatever that looks like for people, you know, and I'm just in the process of figuring out what mine is now.
We have a question from somebody in our newsletter audience. They said, I am a naturally risk averse person, but I feel I have great ideas. Do you think it is possible for someone to be an entrepreneur with this kind of personality? If so, any tips on dealing with the fear?
Well, I talk about that a lot. Like, you have to be not afraid. You know, it is a big like prerequisite, I think, to being an entrepreneur, is like you have to not be scared of all the things that are going to go wrong. And you guys know this. Like, it's like you can't make the shit up that happens. You know, it's crazy. It's bonkers. And that's probably a good time to like partner with somebody who isn't scared of risk, you know, somebody who can kind of hold some of that with you. I don't know that it totally works, you know, but I think because I do think that is a big, big, big part of being an entrepreneur. So, you know, I guess my best advice to that is like partner with somebody who doesn't have that fear, who can like walk into the fire a little bit more. You can hold back a little, but, you know, simply by virtue of what you're doing, so much happens that you can't account for financially, you know, mentally, like all of it. So you have to build a pretty thick skin to be in this world.
You do. Final question. Who is somebody else we should have on this show?
You should have Brittany on. Oh, you'd love talking to Brittany.
Brittany Driscoll.
Yeah.
Brittany Driscoll.
Time to reunite. Good shout out for Brittany. Ali, congratulations on everything. So excited to have you on today. And thank you.
Yeah, this is so fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 9 to 5-ish with The Skim. A new episode will be in your feed again next Wednesday. And if you want to keep up with us in between episodes, follow us on Instagram @Carly and Danielle.
It's a really good account, I promise.